Next Step number 667, March 18, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
We start off today from the Making a Point department of the Next Step. Making a Point. There was a time, yes. Anyway, good to have you with us. So I start off today, just been a kind of a wildly COVID-19 conscious day. I started off the day doing a funeral at 9 this morning. And it's interesting, the man who passed away, 78-year-old man, died of COVID complications, COVID-19. And it's not unusual. Actually, we are going through a huge number of these funerals down here in Los Angeles area, primarily because of the Armenian community here being so large. As Armenian priests, as Armenian clergy, we're overwhelmed, literally overwhelmed. I mean, I'm doing funerals for priests that can't make it, so we're trying to get to everybody. So we end up this morning at a funeral at 9 in the morning at the local Forest Lawn Cemetery. So the man has passed away of COVID, and we read his biography. It's very evident that he's died of COVID. There's nobody's trying to hide the fact, and yet in the back of the congregation that was assembled there, I would say a good maybe 30, 40 men standing there without masks and smoking cigarettes. Yeah, I know. This is unusual, isn't it? During the service, yeah, there's people in the background just smoking cigarette. Kind of makes you think, like, you know, the young student who goes up to the master and says, "Master, is it okay if I smoke while I pray?" And the master says, "No, of course it isn't." He says, "But if you want to pray while you smoke, that's okay." And I think about that too as I watch these guys out there. Anyway, so you can't help but think, like, do you not get it? Do you not get it that we're in the middle of a pandemic? People are dying. Your priests here are, you know, backing up. Literally, at the Forest Lawn here in Hollywood Hills, this morning, 9 o'clock, where I was standing doing a funeral, there was two other graves right next to it, which were open graves. In other words, they were going to be funerals today. I spoke to the funeral director. He says they're doing 30 funerals a day just at that location, and that's with their mortuary services, not including the mortuary services of other funeral homes that bring into Forest Lawn. So it's an incredible number. And so COVID, you know, it's in my head. And of course, I got the vaccine. I got number one vaccine. And today was my second vaccine. So I went in this morning and surprisingly just kind of went through. And being in Glendale, you know, you're the priest and kind of people stop you. And, "Oh, dead-eyed, are you here taking a vaccine?" "Yeah, I am, you know. That's why my shirt's up. That's why I'm sitting here. Yeah, I'm doing that." Anyway, it's kind of fun talking with the people and asking what they're going through, and you get through it. And so the point being that, you know, we're thinking about this. And then what's on the news today? Check this out. And I'm being critical of those people who ignore the COVID warnings. But in this case, is it making a point? That's what I want to ask you as you listen to this story. So in Burbank, which is, you know, little suburb of Los Angeles. It's actually where our cathedral is located. In Burbank, there is a small eatery, a small restaurant that was closed because of the health authorities had closed it because of the COVID. The owners, they went ahead and they opened it despite the health department warnings. The city revoked its license, right? The city revoked its license, the city of Burbank, so that they couldn't do any more business. They went ahead and did business anyway. Then the city said, we'll padlock your doors so that you can't go in physically. You can't go in. So they didn't get rid of the padlocks. No, they didn't do that. But leave it to Armenian ingenuity. Yes, did I mention who the owners were? Leave it to Armenian ingenuity. They took the doors off. And that's what hit the news today, that despite all of these attempts, they're still doing business and defying the orders. So Burbank lawyers have returned back into court and they're trying to get through. Now, here's the question. Is this making a point? Yes, making a point that maybe some of these restrictions have gone overboard. It's also making a point that, hey, we're not going to follow the rules, the direction. I mean, at what point do we say that, okay, it's okay to protest against that rule? And those of you who listen to The Next Step know that this act of protest is so important. It's such a big part of the Christian life, because you cannot accept everything that's being given to you. And at some point, you need to be able to protest. Actually, we're going to be talking about something really, I think you're going to love today's show. It's going to, if nothing else, it's going to challenge you. Challenge you to think, especially at this time of the year as we're getting ready for Easter. But this was an interesting story. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. And yeah, it's a reality. They're fighting the system. And let me see, the defendant's continued operation without a public health permit or CUP, conditional use permit, especially in the midst of COVID-19 pandemic, demonstrate defendants' flagrant flouting of the code, regulations, rules, and standards required for health and safety practices in business, such as restaurants, the suit says. Allowing this to go unchecked could embolden other restaurants and facilities to flout the same permit requirements, which would further undermine health, public health, and safety. And on the other hand, you see that the owners of the property, let's see, it was a different Armenian name. I remember reading it in the story, Lepejan. They're saying that, you know, this, we're being unfairly treated, and this can't. And they make a very good case. And so my question is, at one point, do you say that a law is not a just law? This was the same question that Martin Luther King asked during the civil rights movement. And he challenged Christian ministers too. He says, you cannot obey an unjust law. Now, of course, the stakes were much higher when you're talking about injustice, about racism, you're talking about inequality. I mean, the civil rights movement is a league of its own, in a sense. But the principles that we're talking about, you know, you've got to be able to make those connections too. And here we are in the middle of a pandemic, and there's a small little business that's trying to make it. It's being closed down. It's finding means by which it can open. And it's being constantly shut down. So now with the latest step, putting padlocks on them, they said, okay, fine. We won't take off the padlocks. We'll just take off the doors. And now the business is open. So it's interesting to follow along in that. Because, you know, I'm also simultaneously, as all these things are going on, I'm also revisiting an incredible book, which, unfortunately, I'd completely forgotten about. It's called Uncle Tom's Cabin. It's a classic, of course. Harriet Beecher Stowe. And in revisiting this book, I realize how connected to the Christian message it is. and really a defiant way of looking at the Christian message and asking the questions. I mean, you read it and basically everybody's being held together by the Christian message and that slavery, and that basically you can justify anything. I'm finding it fascinating. And it's been like 40 years I haven't read this, and like here we are. I'm finding it fascinating. As much as it is about slavery, it's about people justifying the evils that they do based on Christian doctrine. And that's where we're going to come in right now. In a few minutes, we're going to be looking at some of that because, well, I've shared this with you through the years, and I'm at a point right now where I need to go public with it. I did a little bit last Sunday in my sermon. If some of you caught it, you know what I'm talking about. But today, we're going to push it. It's going to be a new chapter for Armadoxy, okay? Before we go there, let me also tell you what else is in the news. You might have seen this. You might not have seen it. Actually, it's been on my list of things to share with you for the last few weeks that St. Gregory of Narigazi. St. Gregory of Narig, you remember a few years ago, the Roman Catholic Church designated him as one of the doctors of the Universal Church, the Roman Catholic Church. And in Armenian, this would be called the Vartabed. Vartabed, the doctor of the church. And it was like in 2018, I believe it was, they officially designated him. Now, so what happened last month, a few weeks ago, February, the first observance of Gregory of Narek Day was held in Vatican. The first commemoration of St. Gregory Narigazi, Gregory of Narek, was held in Vatican under the auspices of the Assembly of Eastern Churches and Pontifical Council for the promotion of the Christian unity and in cooperation with Armenia's Embassy of the Holy See, Cardinal Leonardo Santri, Chairman of the Congregations, and Brian Farrell, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of the Christian Unity and Primate of the Armenian Catholic Church in Istanbul, and Archbishop Levon Zekian, Pontifical Delegate of the Mkhitaryist Congregation. Woo! You got a lot of heavyweights in there, don't you, right? A lot of nice little titles there, too, okay? Well, the article goes on, and, you know, you can read it. It's not about the event that happened, but it's our reaction to it. And I want to share with you some concerns that I have about us as Armenian Orthodox, us as Armenian Apostolic Church members looking at things like this, because what happened right around February, people were just like posting this all over the place on social media. They were posting it in conventional Armenian newspapers. And look, the Vatican has now received us. And yeah, that is incredible, isn't it? You know, with the Vatican, with representing the Roman Catholic population, that is a very, very big number. And of course, certainly you're excited and there's some pride involved. But where is our devotion to St. Gregory of Narek from the beginning? Like, you know what I'm talking about? It's like now all of a sudden he's legitimatized. Is that the right word? Yeah. Now he's legitimate for us because the Roman Catholics have approved him. People saying, hey, look at this, the Roman Catholics. Okay, we understand. We understand, but we're an added value to them. And it's not like we need anybody to validate one of our saints. But we're on this bandwagon, and I'm not bringing this up for any other reason to say the direction that we need to take, and this is why we were very strategic from the very beginning of the next step. We wanted to reach out to people who were searching searching for truth in ancient Orthodoxy. We were coming to people with this very simple message of, hey, do you want to go back to the roots of Christianity? Do you want to go there where there was no division? There was just Christ and his 12 disciples? You're talking about the apostolic church. The apostolic church where there was a unique message. And I want you to remember this, because in the second portion of today's show, it's going to be a little bit troubling for a lot of people, but I do want to challenge you to start thinking in this direction too, okay? The apostolic church was Jesus with the 12 disciples. Yes, one of them, Judas took off, was not part of that, but he was replaced, according to Scripture, by Matthias. Now, we always refer to St. Paul as the apostle to the Gentiles sometimes that he's called, that he went out beyond. Paul never met Jesus. He never was in the inside company, but he did meet Jesus according to the account that St. Luke gives us. He met him on the road to Damascus. He was confronted by the resurrected Jesus, and he had his conversion. I know you're familiar with the conversion story, and definitely at this point, I want to look further into it, because it's opening up the doors to a lot of things. So I want to start off by just saying it's interesting that Saint Gregory of Nodeg is now being heralded as the saint of the Christian church. It's beautiful. It's about time Christianity found the works of Naregatsi. But for us, Armenians who have been keeper of that Naregatsi, has familiarity breeded contempt, so that we have really not noticed him until something like this happens and the spotlight is brought on him from outside. Think about this today as we go on to the second portion of today's show. And I've got so much more to share with you. But we're going to take a break a little bit early, but important, because what's coming up is going to be kind of heavy duty. Let's take a break right now with the song of the day and picking out something, well, to celebrate the Irish, to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Yes, yesterday, St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, when you hear the song, you're going to know that there's something, there's a reason why I'm into it. You know, it's whether it's Ireland, Scotland, and I know the United Kingdom. I'm not talking about the governments. I know United Kingdom is with England and Scotland and Northern Ireland. Ireland's on its own. It's over there. But let's forget about those. It'd be like somebody saying, well, like the Turks and the Georgians and the Armenians, you know, there's something similar. There are similarities. Yes, we came about. We've evolved in the Caucasus. Like it or not, anthropologically, we're there, you know. And when you hear this music from Ireland, you're going to say, wow, yeah, there are some strains that have overlapped. For me, I think that we were at one point one continent, and then somehow there was a continental split, and then everything in between between us and Ireland and the United Kingdom, everything. I mean, I made this connection a few years ago when I found out about Stonehenge. I go, wow, you mean they have a Stonehenge? I mean, it's our Carahunge. Carahunge, we had this like thousands of years before. And all of a sudden, everybody's focusing in on Stonehenge. And yeah, it goes back to that same thing. You know, you've got massive people. It's like when you go to Armenia and you look at all the wonders over there, you go, how come people don't know about this? How come Discovery Channel? How come National Geographic's not out there? Well, you don't have the political clout. They don't care about you. I mean, it's jaw-dropping, everything that you see. And this music today, I'm celebrating St. Patrick's Day. A couple days late, but hey, we're in the season. And I just wanted to share with you. This is called My Match, It Is Made. It is by the Chieftains featuring Van Morrison. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. Oh, yes, you know that that is Van Morrison singing with the Chieftains. That is called My Match, It Is Made. Let me see if I could try it in Irish. It's called Tamo Klimhnas Dinta. Now, I gave it a shot, okay? I'll have a link on today's show notes. You'll want to check that out, and I hope you see what I mean. You know, there's... I know, we were all one people at one time. I mean, this is not by coincidence that we sound so similar. And I hope you enjoyed it and kind of gave you a little bit of chance to catch your breath as we get ready for the second portion of today's show. I give you a little warning that this is not for the faint at heart. This is something that has been brewing inside of me, and you've heard me talk about this here and there. You've heard it in sermons, and last week was a little bit more pronounced in my sermon. But I think that this is going to evolve as a pillar of Armadoxy. The idea that end times, the idea that an afterlife is really not our concern and should not be our concern. What God does with us after our lives is completely, we are completely at his mercy. And we fall on his grace. It is completely. What are you going to do? What are you going to ever do to prove yourself worthy? Quote unquote. Like if you have to be worthy to go to an afterlife, a good afterlife, for convenience sake, let's refer to it as heaven. Though I don't like that particular word because it implies something up in the sky as opposed to something universal and all around us. But it's okay. Heaven, it's the traditional word that in the afterlife that you are worthy of heaven, or there is the opposite of that is hell. And you can work for it. You can try your best. You can do all these things. But there's something off on that, isn't there? It's like we're here to prove ourselves and get into heaven. And I think that we're here for another reason. And this is where I need to share this with you. And it has to do with the conversation that takes place in so much of Christianity, the concern about an afterlife. So much so that we are not concerned with life today. And I stumbled upon this many years ago when I looked at the scriptural readings for the Sunday of Advent, which happens to be this Sunday, this coming Sunday. The Sunday of Advent means the coming of Christ. We believe in the second coming of Christ, who is to come and he will judge the living and the dead. We believe this. We pronounce this in our creeds. Sort of like a manifesto. This is what we believe, that there is an afterlife and we will stand in judgment. There's no question about that. That is a fundamental part of our belief. And especially in reference to Christ. He ascended into heaven. We believe in the ascension. And he is sitting at the right hand of the Father, which is the traditional way that we look at it. And he is to judge the living and the dead. So, in a sense, our life here in this world is a proving ground for a life to come. And so our attention is focused in on the life to come. And I thought about this even more last night when I attended a Bible study. And the person who was leading the Bible study made a reference that the Bible, the acronym Bible, B-I-B-L-E, stands for Basic Instruction Before Leaving Earth. Bible, B-I-B-L-E, Basic Instruction Before Leaving Earth. Okay, I mean, it sounds cute. It's very nice. It fits, doesn't it? But something's off, isn't it, right? Because you know that when it was written, it wasn't called Bible. We know that Bible, somebody had to put that together. But it works. It sounds good. But here's my objection to it. You mean that's what the Bible is? It's an instruction book of what we need to do before we leave Earth? Well, what about an instruction book for when we are here on Earth? And so, am I being a little bit too critical to say that, okay, when you say basic instruction before leaving Earth, your attention is on leaving this Earth instead of living on this Earth? Maybe so. Maybe I'm being a little bit too critical. But then I listened a little bit more, and all of a sudden, it clicked. It all came to me. So last night, during this conversation, during this Bible study, the teacher talked about the gospel message being preached. And he turned to everybody and he says, which gospel message? Is it Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John? And in my head right away, because I wasn't going to answer, I was kind of like there, kind of like overseeing. I was like in the background. Long story, don't ask me about all the details, but I wasn't going to answer, but I did answer in my own head. Like when he asks, which gospel are we here to preach? To me, that gospel is the one that Jesus Christ came to give, right? What was his gospel? The kingdom of heaven is at hand, and you can all receive it. Every one of you is eligible to receive the kingdom of heaven. It is right now. It has been enacted in your presence with my being here in your midst. The kingdom of heaven is real. That to me is the gospel message. That's the good news. Gospel of Edis, of Edaran. It means the good news. The good news is that the kingdom of heaven is right now. And God has invited you to it, and you are part of it. Doesn't matter if you're poor. It doesn't matter if you can sing, you can't sing. Doesn't matter if you can walk, you can't walk. Doesn't matter if you could talk, you can't talk. Doesn't matter if you could see, you can't see. It's accessible to everyone. Because the bigger one, it doesn't matter if you're a Jew or you're not a Jew. The kingdom of heaven is yours. And this is what Jesus Christ had to fight. Because the Jews, especially the establishment, which was the Pharisees thought that they were the ones who had access to God, access to eternity. And Jesus says, wait, what are you guys talking about? He says, the first will be last. If you think that you're on that first line, you're going to be last. And all these people that you've put in the last, that you put in the back, that you've been prejudiced against, they will be in the front. And he was very adamant about that. And through the years, I've thought about that. That, you know, was Jesus this rebel Jew? Was he like what we were talking a few minutes ago, where he got to the point where he said, I'm going to protest against the rules and the regulations? Or was there something even more than that? So much so that it was so dangerous that they needed to put him to death. Was he basically saying that it didn't matter? You didn't need to be a Jew to access God? Was he saying this? And through the years, I've thought about this, and it was interesting because I was on a trip several years ago and spent 2 weeks with a group of educators in different continent, and one of them was a Jewish rabbi, a woman, and we were talking one night, and an interesting thing came up. As you know, in the Middle East, it's a very patriarchal society that people are identified by their father, like America, like the Western society, for the most part, right? You're identified, you accept the name of your father, even if your mother has not accepted the name of your father through marriage. Still, when you are born, your last name becomes the last name of your father, and this is even more accented in the Middle East. Where, I mean, the amusing Middle East, because in a moment, we're going to go to Israel, we're going to go to the Jewish people. But in the Middle East, you know, you were identified by your father. In fact, in Russia, I know that because I had to travel to Russia. And I remember they asked my dad's name and it became my middle name. So my middle name became Varujani, of Varujan. And that's the same. If I had a daughter, for instance, in the Middle East, that's Zivart, let's say, okay? If my daughter's name Zivart would be Zivart Vazgeni Movsesyan, of Vazgen. And there was a movie a few years ago, or actually a series, called The Handmaid's Tale, based on a book. And it would be about of the man's name, of Scott, of Robert. And this was in the Middle East. This is still in the Middle East. You are identified by your father. It is patriarchal. And so it was kind of interesting to me. And I, in this conversation that I had with this rabbi, I said, why among the Jews is identity connected with the mother? What? Yeah. Did you know that? If you are the product of a mixed marriage, if your father's Jewish and your mother is, let's say, Christian, you're not a Jew. If your mother is Jewish and your father is, let's say, Muslim, you're considered a Jew. Jewishness is connected to the mother. And I said, this is really pretty interesting that in all of, you know, Middle East, I mean, where do you find this? And by no way am I pretending to be an anthropologist. It could be possible that every other country has this. But in my experience, I don't see this. The Jewish people have a unique way of identifying their child based on the mother's religion. If the mother is Jewish, then the child is considered Jewish. And so I asked this rabbi, I said, when did this happen? And she goes, it happened 2,000 years ago by the decree. And she said, she mentioned the name of some rabbi that back then and the rules were changed and things. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Because if you look at Jesus Christ and you identify him by his mother, then he's a Jew. Oh, yeah, everybody, yeah, he's a Jew. Jesus was a Jew. How many times have you heard that? Jesus was a Jew. And then you bring along all the Jewish traditions and you bring along all the Jewish stories coming out of the Old Testament and everything because Jesus was a Jew. And it's interesting that 2,000 years ago that they connected lineage, connected selfhood with the mother. So Jesus is a Jew because his mother was a Jew. Why? Because if you connected him with his father, then you're talking about Jesus is the Son of God, the Son of all eternity, beyond race, beyond ethnicity, beyond humanity. Isn't that wild? Isn't that wild? All of a sudden now we start clicking. Wait a minute. Now things are starting to fall into place when Jesus said, it doesn't matter who you are. God loves you. Now we start understanding when Jesus says, I'm connected to all of the universe. Now we start understanding when he says, the kingdom of heaven is within you and without you. Now we start understanding what it means when Jesus says he is the Christ. The Anointed One, the Eternal One, the Father and I are one. And so I started to think about this, especially last night, as we were looking at these scriptural. Is the Bible and everything that we're doing as Christians about getting into heaven, is that what it's about? Or is there a message that is central to Jesus that we have skipped, that we have lost? And we come to St. Paul all of a sudden. St. Paul, a man that we all know the story. St. Luke remembers his story in the book of Acts, who was persecuting Christians. Yes, St. Paul was Saul. He was persecuting Christians, and then he has his conversion experience on the road to Damascus. And he's blinded by the light, and he is converted to Christianity, and he becomes the apostle, which we call apostle to the Gentiles, to the non-Jews. And he goes out there and he talks, but what does he talk about? He talks about a lot of the Jewish traditions. He also talks about Greek traditions. And we have put him as the person who really spread Christianity. And now we get to this point about he's spreading the gospel. As I said a few minutes ago, for me, the gospel is, you know, when he asked, what is the gospel message? It's not about Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. It's the collection. It's the collection of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which is that the kingdom of heaven is available and it is accessible. And I will even prove it by going up on a cross and overcoming that cross. So I was ready to answer this last night, and all of a sudden he says, well, nobody answered correctly. So he says, the gospel message is the message that was proclaimed by St. Paul. And he turns to the letter to the Corinthians, the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 15. Let me read it to you. Now I would remind you, brothers, of the good news, namely the gospel, that I proclaimed to you, which you in turn received, in which also you stand, through which also you are being saved. We're being saved through the gospel. If you hold firmly to the message that I proclaimed to you, unless you have come to believe in vain. So all of a sudden we're getting into all these words and everything like that. It's a big stretch from the simplicity of Jesus's initial message. But here's the part that gets me. For I handed on to you as of first importance what I in turn had received. Are you ready? This is the gospel. That Christ died for our sins in accordance with the scriptures, and that he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas, then to the 12, then he appeared to more than 500 brothers and sisters at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have died. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles. Last of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared also to me. For I am the least of the apostles, unfit to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and by the grace toward me has not been in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. Whether then it was I or they, so we proclaim, and so you have come to believe. Now, if Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection? And he goes on and on. Okay, so the gospel message, according to this, is Christ died for our sins, and he resurrected. And therefore, we have an opportunity to be justified by grace and live in eternity. Accept that. That's what you need to accept. Now, by doing this, what's going on? What's happening? We've discounted the mass, the bulk of what Jesus Christ was about. The humility. We've discounted all of his teachings. Teaching us to live in harmony with one another. What does forgiving your brother, not seven times, but seven times 77 times mean? It means living in harmony with your brother here in this world. It's not about, I have to do this to get to heaven. I have to do this because this world is beautiful. And I need to be able to live in harmony with my brothers. And so all of a sudden, it just like clicked in my head that we have just really distorted this beautiful message that Jesus brought by focusing our attention on an afterlife instead of focusing our attention on the here and now. And as I started to tell you, this all clicked and made sense to me many years ago. This is where it started, and it all clicked last night. But it was on the Sunday of Advent. When you think about Advent, the second coming of Christ, who is to come to judge the living and the dead. And this coming Sunday, we commemorate it in the Armenian Church. It is the last Sunday of Lent, and it's called the Sunday of Advent, looking at the second coming. And this was a revelation to me, that when I went to the scriptures to look to see, what did our fathers understand about the second coming of Christ? And I opened up the scriptures to find which passage had they prescribed for us to read on Advent Sunday. You would think that they would give us the passage where Jesus says, I am coming and I'm going to take over. I'm going to blow up the world. I'm going to do this and that and all the eternity and everything. No. The reading for this Sunday, the Sunday of Advent, the Sunday dedicated to the second coming of Christ, is from Matthew chapter 22, verses 34 and following to 23:39. And what is it? Are you ready? When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" How are you going to test him with that? Well, they thought, like, okay, Jesus is going to pick. Maybe he'll say, like, you should not kill. And if he said that, they'd say, well, what about lying? What about stealing? You know, they're going to trick him. They're going to trick him, right? So, "Teacher, which commandment is in the law is the greatest?" And Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Okay, what more do we need to say at this point? This is it. You don't need to worry about a future time if you're doing everything right in this time. In other words, the way our church fathers have told us to look at the second coming of Christ is to focus in on his first coming. And what did he say during his first coming? Love one another. Love the Lord your God and love each other. It's not that difficult. Why did we complicate this? It doesn't say anything about going back and looking at the stories and what happened to Adam and Eve and what happened to Noah and what happened to Job and what happened to Joseph and his code, his dreams and all that. No. It's about the here and now. And I think what we've done is we've done a disservice as a Christian church to really the gospel message that the kingdom of heaven is right now. It's not about some future time. What happens in the future, you have absolutely no control over. You don't. If God so decides that tomorrow's the end of time, okay. You can't bargain with him. If he decides that it's going to be in 10,000 years, you can't sit there and say, well, you know, I kind of wanted to see how it's going to end. Can you mind arranging it in the next couple weeks? What? You can't predict it. Jesus says nobody knows that time. He says what concerns for you is today. Can you be the best person you can be? Can you trust God with all of eternity? Can you focus on what your mission is as a human being? To love, to care for, to take care of, to cherish the life that you've been given. To celebrate each day as a new day, as a miracle given to you by God. Can you do that and leave the rest to God? And I think that this is really going to be, for me, a cornerstone for what we've come to identify as Armadoxy, taking a look at the apostolic message. In other words, what did the apostles believe? And then stripping away some of the hoopla. I used to say all of the hoopla, and I'm kind of like figuring that, okay, maybe some of the hoopla is good. But you know what I mean. It's like, let's get down to the brass tacks. What is essential? Isn't that the purpose of Lent as it is? To look at what is essential? Well, how about making Lent a permanent part of our life? And understanding that we are creatures of God who has sent us to find harmony with one another. Not to be worried or consumed about tomorrow, but to trust him as a loving father that he is in charge. To say, God, thy will be done. We accept that. Now what I need to do is to be able to forgive, to love, to care, not just about people, not just about myself, about the world you have given us, to take care of it, to enjoy it, to celebrate it, not to abuse it, to take the talents. And so when we look at the Bible as basic instruction before leaving Earth, how about looking at the Bible as basic instruction about the today, about how to live? I know the acronym doesn't work, but life isn't about acronyms. It's about working out today. And to me, when I read Holy Scriptures, it's to teach me about how to live. I am not saved because of Holy Scriptures. I will never be, and nobody will be saved by reading a Bible. You are saved through Christ, and we believe that. We trust Him to do that. And don't worry about that. Now worry about what can you do, the message that He gave us on His first coming. And everything, as He says, everything will fall into place. Set your mind on God's kingdom, and all else will fall in place. That kingdom is right now. I'm glad the piano player came right at that moment. I needed to break. Here's Susie with her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you, all of you, for sharing your beautiful thoughts with me, your words, your inspirations. I want to wish you all the best. I know it's been a different kind of Lenten season. I hope you've been following along the Lenten Journey series that we have. If you haven't, guess what? There's about a week left. You can binge, you know, you binge on Netflix. You can binge on this one. Just kind of like do them all in one day, and then you still got 1 week. Which reminds me, check out our show notes. We put links to all kinds of stuff in there, things we talk about, other things that will interest you pertaining to the topics that we talked about. What I shared with you today was really from, it was a necessary step for me to take. I needed to articulate it because I'm at a point right now where I'm understanding that, you know, life is limited. Life has its moments, and especially in this COVID environment, as we're really no guarantees. We're seeing people going through a lot of difficulties. Really, what's necessary for us is to share God's love here in the here and now. Eternity is waiting; it'll be there. And when the time comes, you leave it to God. That's why the greatest prayer that we have is, Lord, have mercy. Leave it to God. Lord, in His mercy, He will look on us. Now, instead of worrying about a time to come, let's focus in on this life, this beautiful life that God has given us. I want to thank you for supporting this ministry because it really is something novel. Every time that I get together, that I share, we have a beautiful Bible study group which meets every Monday night. Sort of some of these ideas start pinging over there. You know what a ping is? That was an old computer term where they'd ping you. They'd, let's say, hey, I'm here. Ping! we ping one another with different statements, with different realities, with questions that stir our mind, that get our hearts going, and make us alive, happy that we're alive. And I hope, if nothing else, that's what the next step does for you. If it does, please tell your friends, please share the links to the next step, and be supportive in any way that you can. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. We're going to be saying goodbye to Ken in a few weeks. He's going to be leaving us to go on. He's going to be heading out to Jakarta. Yes, and we wish him the best over there. We'll be you're right. He used to take care of it remotely. We'll be looking for somebody. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to be doing, because so many things are in flux. But we will get through Easter and the Easter time. Once again, check out our show notes. On behalf of Susie, our producer, and Ken, our technical director, this is Father Bosco, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance top minutes.